This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We're answering your questions. You can send us questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. Layla Mudin's our Hoffman Center nutritionist. We work together on a daily basis, solving patients' problems. And Layla is available to solve your problems. Even if you're not able to physically come to the Hoffman Center, she does phone consultations, and she's happy to work with you and your current healthcare professional. Find out about it via drhoffman.com or go to hoffmancenter.com for information on how you can become a patient of Layla Mudin. So what's our next question?
Our next question, we've got an email from Aaron. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, since I've been diagnosed with Hashimoto's, I've been concerned whether or not to continue with a multivitamin which contains 112 micrograms of iodine. My doctor said a little is okay, but that was a pretty vague response. I switched to one without iodine, and that has some selenomethionine just to be safe. What are your thoughts? Well,
my thoughts are a little is okay.
Yeah.
Like the doctor says.
A little is okay.
And that sounds a little vague, but go ahead.
Hashimoto's is an autoimmune condition where the immune system is attacking thyroid, and Hashimoto's can actually be triggered by too much iodine. And from my reading, 400 micrograms a day is really the upper tolerable limit. Most multivitamins will contain somewhere in the range of 150 micrograms, mm-hmm. which should be okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're eating half a bag of seaweed in your salad every day, that might then become a little too much, because we're getting seaweed, we're getting iodine from the sea, also from seafood, other places like onions, maybe a little bit from dairy if dairy equipment is still being cleaned with iodine solution, mm-hmm. that kind of a thing.
Right.
But those with Hashimoto's do want to be careful not to take additional iodine supplements, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a real iodine fervor that was spawned by Dr. David Brownstein to some extent as a advocate for high-dose iodine. And I think there are settings in which iodine can be used therapeutically, particularly in breast cancer, in women who have fibrocystic breast disease. Iodine certainly important for thyroid functioning. If you don't have enough, you're likely to get a goiter. Not all goiters are due to iodine deficiency, but some are. Less and less in this country, mm-hmm. where we seem to have at least moderate amounts of iodine in our diets. Now we have seafood and, you know, most even landlocked parts of the United States. And our salt is fortified with iodine, but in previous times, there was no iodine in places like Minnesota, and a very high percentage of the population got goiters, even though they ate fish from freshwater sources. So what iodine can do at too high a level is sometimes it can suppress thyroid function, but it can also, when your thyroid is inflamed, it can sometimes create what's called a thyroid storm, which is that you get hyperthyroid. Your thyroid goes into overdrive. So it's a little bit risky to go with really high-dose iodine supplementation. The amount in that supplement should be fine. And it's actually been suggested that you can protect against thyroid storm or adverse effects from thyroid by taking adequate selenium. It is true that selenium seems to be a protective factor against that. But I don't think, you know, our current foundation formula, I believe, contains that amount of iodine. And it's I don't discourage patients from taking it under most circumstances. There's not really a problem.
Erin has a second part to her question. She's wondering, is intermittent fasting, either full-day fast, maybe 1 or 2 days a week, appropriate for those with Hashimoto's, or will it accelerate the chance of developing hypothyroidism?
Well, I would say it's not a bad idea because you can actually help to regulate the immune system with intermittent fasting. And since it's an autoimmune disease, that might be beneficial. I'm not sure how it could possibly make things worse. Do you see any problems with
that? Well, what I'm relating to her question here is those who get the regular standard hypothyroidism can be from lifelong yo-yo dieting.
I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
Intermittent fasting is a little bit different,
right.
And you know, for those with regular standard hypothyroidism who are trying to eat less and less calories and even fast, are actually doing themselves a disservice by further suppressing thyroid function.
Right.
I think.
But intermittent fasting.
But
might
doing
be,
intermittent fasting the right way is actually beneficial for most people.
Can you describe the right way?
The right way, well, if you're doing maybe one day a week, maybe 1.5 to 2 days a week, it doesn't even have to be a week. It could be every 2 weeks or so. Those who are having issues with weight maintenance or want to get some weight loss going, or those with medical conditions who need more time for rest and repair, doing an intermittent fast can really help and increase mitochondria.
Right.
And
it can even be a quasi-fast. It can be like, you know, the 5-2 plan or the Dukan plan, which is 2 days a week, 500 calories or less. And what that does is it sort of spares the metabolic machinery a little bit. It doesn't starve you, but it creates sort of a reboot of your metabolism and your immune system. And it, as you say, it provides rest. Another way to incorporate the notion of intermittent fasting is to, instead of, and this kind of goes contrary to the idea of have a big hearty breakfast as soon as you wake up, is to extend the period between your last meal, you know, stop eating at 8 by 8, don't eat late, and then have your first meal at 11, which gives you what, you know, 16 hours of, in effect, a fast, which the body is well adapted to. That's, you know, what our primitive ancestors went for long periods of time in deprivation, and, you know, then they got a lot of food and they chowed down. You know, as we like to, because we're opportunistic eaters. And when there's food, we stuff ourselves. And when there's no food, well, you know, tough luck.
And for those who must have breakfast upon rising, those with blood sugar issues, there's a different way to do that fast. You know, on any given day, you can make lunch your last meal.
Mm-hmm.
So that by the time you're having breakfast the next morning, it is 16, 18 hours later.
Right, okay.
Or so.
Good.
So that works very well. You know, that's something that I prefer because when I get up in the morning, I have to have breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
It just sets me up for the day. So it's that kind of a thing. But you could do it that way as well. Say you're going to have lunch at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then that's it. You skip dinner, you go to sleep. You might have the best sleep of your life when you do that, by the way, folks. For those who have trouble sleeping, you may find that that's actually helpful. So, there are different ways to do the intermittent fast. I don't think Erin would be, I don't think it would be a disadvantage for Erin with Hashimoto's.
Good.
So, thank for that. Thank you for your questions, Erin. All right. We've got an email from Caroline. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I've been diagnosed with an overdose of beta-carotene after complaining about frequent low-grade headaches and nausea and fatigue for the past couple of years. I have the symptoms a few days each month, and the rest of the time I feel fine. Now, I've been on an anti-cancer protocol with an alternative doctor for the past 5 years after a breast lumpectomy. I'm juicing carrots 3 times a day, in addition to a daily beta-carotene supplement, which was about 25,000 IU. Well, a blood test did confirm that my beta-carotene was out of range, so I stopped the supplement. I've stopped the carrot juicing, but I'm actually experiencing more symptoms now than previously. Is this part of the detoxification of beta carotene?
Boy, wow. I think this person
really
took.
She needs to work up, Dr. Hoffman.
Well, she does, and I think she took a wrong turn because diagnosis of beta carotene excess causing nausea and malaise. That doesn't make any sense. And
usually we see that with hypervitaminosis A, and I'm wondering, is Caroline making the mistake of saying beta carotene, not vitamin A? But if she's juicing carrots, she's not getting the A, she's getting the beta carotene.
So let's explain. So first of all, you know, on an anti-cancer regimen, I get it. You know, you're going to juice a lot. Some people believe that that's, you know, going to provide you with all those wonderful protective plant nutrients that have anti-cancer effects. Okay, so a little primer on the vitamin A family. And I call it the family because there are really two forms. There's beta carotene, and which belongs in the family of the carotenoids, which includes lycopene, lutein, zeaxanthin. These are all carotenoids. They have different functions. But beta carotene is actually pro vitamin A. So even if you don't get any vitamin A in your diet, vitamin A sources include liver, for example, and other foods. You probably know some other sources of actual vitamin A. But most
vitamin
of the
A butter.
Yeah, butter. Yeah. Butter. But actually, much of the vitamin A that we get is formed from a conversion of beta carotene into vitamin A. So, however, that's rate limited. In other words, you can have, a gallon of carrot juice every day, and your body will stop turning it into vitamin A. There's a feedback mechanism. So what will end up happening is your skin will get very yellow or orange, and that's a sign of what's called carotenemia, which is high levels of beta carotene in your bloodstream, which is virtually harmless, except it's got a cosmetic effect. It should not make you nauseous. And you definitely will, under those circumstances, have a high level of beta carotene. I see it a lot in patients who are vegetarian, or it's actually sometimes a tip off that a patient has thyroid problems, is they're not converting the beta carotene to vitamin A. So the headaches that this person experiences at certain times of the month there's another reason for them. It's not too much beta carotene. Conventional doctors sometimes do this. They actually don't understand nutrition. So, for example, patients will have some weird symptom, and doctors will ask, well, what are you taking? A person may say, well, I'm taking this, and I'm taking B6. So they say, well, let's draw your levels. And, oh, my goodness, the vitamin B6 levels are high. You're suffering from those symptoms that you have are due to B6 toxicity. Well, no, it's just that you have high levels of B6 because you're taking B6, and it's not the fault of the B6. We got to look elsewhere for the problem. So here, coincidentally, the person has these headaches and has high beta carotene. That's not the reason for her problem. It's really that's a mistake.
It's interesting that you mention hypothyroidism because she does complain of fatigue.
Well, there you go. Well,
I wonder what the nausea is about.
Yeah,
Caroline needs a workup. To see what's going on there, for her to place the blame on the beta carotene,
I suspect it's a conventional doctor who, you know, saw that she was doing a lot of that and, you know, maybe, read a couple of paragraphs about, vitamins and believes that they're a vitamin maven, and especially with a view towards the toxicity of vitamins, which is often overplayed in conventional medicine. And, you know, they think they were a great nutritional detective and pinned down the problem. And now this poor person is stopped taking, you know, any fruits and vegetables, which is to her detriment, you know, and just barking up the wrong, and she's feeling worse. And so now she's thinking, well, you know, maybe I'm detoxifying. Well, no, I don't think you're detoxifying from that. You're not better, but for another reason.
Caroline needs to follow up with a nutritionally oriented practitioner.
Thank you. Yep.
Yeah, most definitely. And we wish you the best of luck, Caroline.
Yep.
Okay. We've got an email from Jill. Hello. Can you speak more about ashwagandha? I'm looking to incorporate it into my daily supplementation for anxiety reduction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a healthy 37-year-old female. Is that something I can take daily, long term? And also, do you both take it? Just curious.
Well, I take two capsules a day. Yeah.
Yep. I don't take it, but I would if I needed to, you know, or if I felt that I need to take some. Ashwagandha is actually an adaptogenic herb. It's an exotic Indian herb. It helps with stress relief, depression, anxiety, has very positive effects on the nervous system, and it's been validated in the treatment of anxiety and depression and with any adrenal type of stress at all, not necessarily related to anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
Other benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that it's a sort of a stimulant, but it's a non-stimulating stimulant. Unlike caffeine, which you know will give you a jolt, ashwagandha gives you strength. In Sanskrit, the ancient Indian language, means the smell of a horse, which indicates that the herb imparts the vigor of a sweaty stallion to you.
Uh-huh.
I don't know per se if it's considered an aphrodisiac, but it also has a calmative effect. So it's in the category of adaptogens, and of course there are other adaptogens like ginseng and rhodiola. These are some of the main
rhodiola,
ones that are used. But it's useful for stress, fatigue, lack of energy, but also seems to be a focus factor when it comes to mental capacity.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of mm-hmm. other benefits.
There was some studies done that it validated it can help to repair damaged nerve cells.
Okay.
And impaired nerve signaling pathways, and it can help support the regeneration of nerve cells, axon, dendrites, mm-hmm. and so forth. So. Yeah, very, very beneficial. It may be useful in Alzheimer's for this reason.
Right. So there's cognitive benefits.
So they're looking at ashwagandha for that, as well as for Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know. There are other studies that are suggesting potent anti-cancer activity. It has the potential to stop cancer cells in their tracts. I'm actually reading from Life Extension. So this is very, very exciting. Yeah. There was an animal experiment that demonstrated that ashwagandha extract produced a marked increase in lifespan and decrease in tumor weight
mm-hmm.
in animals. Yeah, this is also very exciting. So, yeah, Jill, I would definitely take some ashwagandha. Also, you want to look into the source of your anxiety. You know, be it psychological, but anxiety also has a physiological basis.
Mm-hmm.
It could be food allergy. It could be unstable blood sugar.
Yep.
If you suffer from hypoglycemia, often that hypoglycemia can feel like anxiety. So you want to look into that before you even start taking the ashwagandha. You want to do some investigating. You do that with a qualified practitioner.
Indeed.
And see what else may be going on. Yeah.
Right. We have time for an additional question, so can you queue one up for us?
Yeah. Let's see. This comes from Michael. Dear Leila and Dr. Hoffman, really I heard from a very credible source that Bacopa has been shown to improve various cognitive functions via numerous ways.
Mm-hmm.
Have you used it for any of your patients, and if so, was it efficacious? I also heard that some Bacopa supplements have been found to contain lead. Thank you for your comments.
Okay.
Now, I know we recently got Bacopa in our dispensary,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't seen any firsthand results yet because I don't think we've had it long enough to prescribe to see a result, but there is evidence that Bacopa is very helpful. Now, with the comments about supplements having been found to contain lead. There is lead everywhere. It's in our municipal water systems. It's in our food supply. So it's leaching into the environment. We're all living in one world. So lead is pretty much everywhere. It's a matter of how much.
But it's also something that is it's also something that's cropped up sometimes in with supply chain problems and products that you get from India and China.
Mm.
And so we have to be particularly careful, and we want to get source it from reliable manufacturers. So when we got our Bacopa, we made sure that it was dispensed by a company that does proper auditing of their supply chain and proper testing. So I have here actually a study from 2014. It's a meta-analysis of the cognitive effects of Bacopa. So Bacopa is actually an ingredient in, you know, there's a product that used to be advertised on the radio a lot, not anymore. It's called Focus Factor. And it was designed it was for ADD, but also, you know, so that for students studying and for kids with ADD and for adults who are concerned about memory, not even so much for Alzheimer's disease, but more for the claim to fame of Bacopa is that Bacopa was helpful even if you didn't have profound cognitive problems or, you know, age-related cognitive decline, but if you just wanted to be mentally more sharp. So this is a little review where they looked at 289 published studies, but, you know, most of them were poor quality, so they decided that only 9 of them were good enough to be included in this meta-analysis. And so what they found was that it was promising. It seemed to help. It was also not harmful, and the authors conclude that Bacopa, I'm quoting here, that Bacopa may be beneficial in improving attention, and because attention was improved, the extract might be an appropriate treatment for young patients having attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So it's one of those things where there are some promising studies. It is not a slam dunk that this is invariably helpful for everyone. It might be something worth trying for people who are trying to, you know, feel a little more mentally sharp. Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, and once again, let's you know, that's just we'd said with anxiety. When we approach memory and focus problems, we want to take a really comprehensive, holistic view. We want to make sure there's not underlying food allergies. We want to make sure there's not underlying hormonal problems, you know, as in, you know, menopausal loss of estrogen or low testosterone in males or problems with anxiety, because anxiety is something that absolutely robs you of memory and focus. Mild depression, you know, can certainly cause cognitive problems. And, you know, B12 deficiency, especially as people get older, can absolutely rob you of proper memory. Lack of essential fatty acids can be an element in that. And on it goes. You know, blood sugar fluctuations, ups and downs of blood sugar can attack memory function. So
And this being deficient in B vitamins, B1, B6 as well.
Unfortunately, the holistic movement has come to resemble the conventional medicine movement in some ways, because we look in conventional medicine for panaceas. We want to look for a pill, like a memory pill, like an Alzheimer's pill. And in conventional medicine, that's the pharmaceutical model. But in natural medicine, we really want to look at take a comprehensive view of all the factors involved, rather than just say, go to the health food store, like, what do you have for memory? What do you got for me? Well, okay, fine. Yeah, there may be some things that work that way, but we really want to take a very global view of all the things that impact memory and mood and focus and concentration. And that may involve diet, hormones, various supplements, stress reduction, exercise, which is wonderful for supporting memory. And that's the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for your email question, Michael.
And thank you, Layla, for joining us today. And that's all the time that we have for today's Q&A with Layla. And I want to remind you that many of the supplements we talk about on this program are available in the highest quality form at the most reasonable prices via drhoffman.com. So ensure a continual supply of these free informational podcasts and all the news that you get via our newsletter and via our website. by supporting the Hoffman Center. Go to drhoffman.com or go to thehoffmancenter.com and check out our Hoffman Center dispensary, where we offer you the finest supplements, the very self-same supplements that we offer to our patients at the Hoffman Center. Thanks again, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
And have a great week. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.